It is a great joy and honor and privilege and event of a great magnitude to be able to lead this retreat, which is an extremely serious, sacred seminar on the essential issues involved in becoming successful on the spiritual path. So I want to welcome everyone on the live stream, love stream. Welcome back, Tara G, from your journey. And welcome, Isha. And who else? Heidi is still here, and wonderful to see you as well. And Mary has arrived. Proud, humble Mary has made it. And I think that covers the comings and goings that I'm aware of. Ram is still here as well, and it's a joy to see him. And I hope that everyone is in a receptive state of consciousness to take in the information at a very profound level of its significance, not simply at the level of the signifier, but to really go to the signified and beyond to the referent of the terms that we will be using to speak of that which cannot be described in language, but can only be pointed to metaphorically and analogously and with some descriptive elements of the byproducts of the practice. So the subject of the retreat is, as it's written on the board, the practice of self-mastery. I do not often use that term. In fact, I think it was many years ago that I last used that term in a teaching of a module. But it's a useful term, for one thing, because it's very popular, that I have discovered by doing a very simple online search with the term. But what I've discovered is that the use of the concept of self-mastery is now, for the most part, focused on becoming sufficiently disciplined to be able to achieve success in your worldly desires, to get what you want out of life as a person. But self-mastery from the perspective of Sat Yoga is very, very different. It's not about getting what you want. It's about transcending all wanting. It's about letting go, not about gaining something. I do have to say that for the most part, the serious essays and videos that I saw tend to take off from Stoic philosophy, one of the ancient Greek philosophies, most popular, especially by the Roman time with Seneca and Cicero and Marcus Aurelius, but going back to Epictetus and a whole tradition, a whole series of sages. But for all the virtues that Stoicism has, and it does have many virtues to teach, I think the most important of which is detachment, I think its virtues will enable one to live courageously in the world as a person and to face life and death, both, with courage and even with fearlessness, if one practices sincerely the teachings of Stoicism. But what it will not do is to take you to the realization that who you are transcends the level of being a person in a world. And that's where Satyoga comes in, because Satyoga is a continuation of the most ancient traditions of both East and West, but primarily of Advaita Vedanta, Buddhism of various non-dual schools, and of course the Shaivite wisdom schools of Kashmir, the non-dual schools, the Trika, the Kala, the Krama, and especially the Pratyabhigya and the reorganization and unification of all of those schools by the great sage Abhinavagupta, whose picture is actually still on the wall at the top, and he deserves that position. And Taoism, of course, and we will be offering an approach to self-mastery that is most easily understandable from any or all of those perspectives, in which we are dealing not only with being but with nothingness and with the non-duality of samsara and nirvana, of the imminent life in the phenomenal plane and the transcendent consciousness of the absolute. What I have found through the hard experience of working with thousands of people over the years, but especially in this last period when the ego structure has morphed even into a greater density at the collective level, but also fractally for the individual, is that nearly everyone is quite content to settle for a slightly happier life as an individual person in the world. That's the goal. Let me be a happy person. Let me achieve some inner peace. Let me let go of my suffering, at least as much as I can let go of and still be a person in the world. And the problem with having that paradigm and perspective is that most people, even when they have entered into the practice of yoga and the study of yoga philosophies plural, as in terms of the non-dual yogas, as well as the Vishishtadvaita yogas and Patanjali's classical yoga schools, which tend to begin by assuming that someone entering that wisdom school is in fact identified as a bodily person in the world living in duality or multiplicity. And there are very few who enter a school, or even long after they have studied in a school, transcend that frame of reference. And very few consider seriously letting the ego identity fall away forever and realizing God consciousness. It rarely even occurs to most egos as a possible reality to be attained, let alone one to be striven for with all one's might and one's heart and one's strength and one's soul. Very rarely does that happen. And so what that does is cause the ego that is not only satisfied with the non-transcendence into non-duality, but it is even rejects the possibility, actually doesn't want it. Because they identify with the ego, and the ego doesn't want to die, it doesn't want to dissolve, it wants to sustain its identity and achieve its goals. And so even though the rapture of God consciousness, to anyone who thinks clearly about that option versus staying in the ego and trying to improve it or make it more sattvic or deal with life with more intelligence and virtue and whatever might seem to enable one to navigate the world of experience in a more healthy and positive way with less suffering, that's sufficient. But that will cause you to interpret the non-dual teachings from the imaginary register. And by interpreting them in that register of your consciousness, it will make the, let's call it attainment, or at least the return to our true nature, our full and complete nature as the consciousness that is God, it will make that into something that is felt to be a loss rather than a gain, a sacrifice and a submission. And it is true in a certain way that if you start out in duality and you wish to become one with God consciousness, because God will be perceived and conceptualized as the great other, the great spirit, the all-powerful Lord of life and death, that self-mastery will have to appear as self-surrender. Until non-duality is attained. Because the little false self identified with the body, in order to transcend that into the infinite consciousness, light, intelligence, power, deathlessness of your real self, that little self that's made of fear and desire and petty concerns, obsessions, and relationships of collusion and prejudice and projection, all of that will have to die. Your whole identity will have to disappear if you want to realize that you are God. And this is the obstacle that very few get beyond. So as I open this retreat I made a lot of notes and haven't even had time to organize them, and I have no idea how many I'm going to be able to talk about. But it is the quality, not the quantity, of information. But the first four threshold questions that I have for you that everyone has to answer in order to even enter into this path, other than having an imaginary version of it. Because if you're in the imaginary, you'll either pretend you've already achieved it, or you'll create some imaginary proxy for it, or you will create some justification for why it's not really necessary and all is well with the role that you're playing in the cosmic drama, etc. But you really have to face at some point, usually in the middle of the night, and it can disturb your sleep until you've resolved it. Do I even want God consciousness? Do I want it? How many of you have actually confronted that question fully head on? Okay, the second question, because what that means is you have not settled for living a life as an individual person in the world. You know that's false. You know the person is a fictional crazy quilt of internalizations of the projections, fantasies, and desires of your family system and your social order, and of the external other with whom you are mimetically enmeshed. So the question then, if you pass the first one, is how much do I want it? I can say I want it and I can be serious, but it still could be, okay, on the weekends, you know, I'll meditate. This will be a nice hobby for me. How much do I want it? Because if I don't want it more than I want anything else, I won't get it. And then third question, am I willing to pay the price? Because it's a huge price. It's your entire identity. It will literally go up in smoke in the sacrificial fire. Am I willing to pay that price? And then the final question I think we all need to answer is, am I ready to pay that price now, in full? Not on an installment plan or a credit card, but in full, cash on the barrel. And God takes only gold, the golden light of the real. Am I willing to do it now? Because I know that it's now or never. Is there anyone who can answer all those fours with a yes, with a total haji? Keep it to yourself. It's not for me or anyone else to know. It's probably the most private and personal decision you'll ever make. So then the question is, why? Why? What's the benefit? I know the cost, we've talked about that. And it does seem like there must be a benefit to abiding in God consciousness. But the ego can't even imagine the benefit. All it sees is the loss. So self-mastery, which means not the mastery of in the little self of a particular skill, you know, because most of the things you will see on YouTube about self-mastery, they are taught by a martial artist or some financial wizard, so-called, who will make you more successful financially, or some Don Juan who will teach you how to seduce people, or it will be someone who will help you have the discipline of achieving success in some applied form of your intelligence, whether it's an art or music or a scientific profession or philosophy or whatever. But it's always going to be limited to the ego's attainment of something in the world. And that has to be let go of. That's the cost, at least in the initial stages. But the benefit is total freedom. But the ego has a hard time appreciating freedom because it's freedom from the ego. It's the freedom of not having a mind filled with mental chatter. Not filled with having a narrative. Not filled with a constant flow of impulses, desires, drives. I want this, I need this, I've got to get this. I hate this, I've got to get away from this. Desires and aversions. And the other side of that, of course, is fear and anxiety. In fact, desire is a compensation and a defense against the underlying terror, the fear of death, fear of pain, fear of life, fear of loneliness. So many fears, so many things to be anxious about. So many worries. So the Shaivites say there are three malas and that we have to get free of. The first is karma mala, supposedly the easiest, but I think not so easy at all. What is the karma mala? It's the enjoyment of being an agent. Having agency, being a doer, being able to get things accomplished, to achieve something, to have power, dominance, prestige, all the things that action in one's fantasy could lead to. And of course, a world in which one feels much more comfortable than one may be at the moment, but usually that doership ends up in disappointment. But that's the karma mala. That's the easiest one to let go of. Then there's the maya mala. But what is maya? It means letting go of all of your narratives, of everything you believe. And even more nitty-gritty, letting go of all of your attitudes toward life. Because they are all the attitudes of a person which carry the signature of that identification, which is chained to the baggage of suffering, of the traumas that were involved in the initial formation of that persona. And then the anava mala, of course, the sense of existing as a particular being in the world at all, and letting go of the I thought that has organized all of your experience and your thoughts and given you a sense of order and purpose and meaning and whatever else has constituted the fabric of your subjectivity. So these three malas that must be transcended require a tremendous amount of determination and of clarity and of relentless, I would even say, well, the sages say, ceaseless practice until it's accomplished. Because every time the practice is interrupted and one falls back into the ego, it reestablishes itself, and it's like chutes and ladders, and you're back in square one. And that can happen even after years of sadhana. So the determination to achieve freedom must be of such character that it has the strength of will to overcome the ego drives and desires and diversions and denials and other forms of resistance. How many can relate to all of this so far? Yeah? Okay. Because you have to understand the nature of the situation in order to get out of it. And deeper than what I have said is there has to be a gut level as well as a heart level feeling that recognizes the unbearable torment that is festering in the subconscious mind, whether you are allowing it to come up and feel it or it's being acted out through symptoms of a somatic kind or a karmic kind or some other kind. But life as an ego is in fact torture, even though egos are very good at denying that and creating an illusory comfort zone. So the determination to transcend the ego now must be so strong that your orientation is, I must achieve this now or die trying. I will not settle for failure or delay. If you don't have that relentless orientation and commitment, then you may be wasting your time. So I want to go to the next level of perception that unfolds as you enter the spiritual path, if you have said yes to all of those questions. And then you say, okay, what do I do, right? Because that's always what the ego says, as if it's about doing. But because the teachers have categorized students as either in the anavopaya mode, in other words, you believe you're a person in the world, a bodily being, so the teaching has to start with duality and with acts of doing. If you're in the Shaktopaya level, then all it requires is a change of thoughts. but no action needs to happen of a behavioral sort. And then if you're in the highest level of readiness, then it's simply fully recognizing the truth of the real and letting go of the false at once. Supposing that you're in the anavopaya, which is 99.9%, I think, of students now, then you have to overcome some very powerful habits. Habits of dysregulation in order to achieve internal regulation and self-control, let alone self-mastery. So the Shaivites, again to use their maps, because I think they're very accurate, there are five initial stages of mind or mental activity that you will discover as you enter the path of meditation. And meditation being defined as the silencing of the ego chatter, just that. And in the anavopaya mode, if you are in ego consciousness, what you discover is the first stage of mind that you have to deal with, to your horror, is what is called the kshipta state. Maybe I'll write it so. Let's see. Five stages of mind. Initial stages, but we'll start with that. You'll sometimes read it in more Sanskritic, like kshiptam and other variants. But what kshipta means is that your mind is scattered. In fact, your mind is so scattered that you're barely aware that it's scattered. There's just a constant flow of thoughts that are not regulated, they're not in some higher order, they're not directed towards some goal. There's a thought, I want this, and then I want that, and then, ooh, I forgot to do this, and why did this person say that to me, and what am I going to have for dinner, and et cetera, et cetera. But without any control over what arises, you are at the mercy of your thoughts. And your thoughts are deliberately scattering because the ego is resisting concentration. It's not some accident. It's not some, you know, shouldn't be a surprise. But that's the ordinary state of the ego. Extremely scattered. If one begins to meditate, one may also discover, as you calm down the mental activity, that it actually increases the bodily symptoms of anxiety. So that in the middle of your meditations, you begin to scratch and you begin to move and you begin to touch yourself and you begin to have all kinds of anxiety somatizing symptoms in which you can't sit still. Sometimes people will crack their knuckles. Other times they will pull their hair or curl it. Or sometimes they will have other little tics and habits. But hardly anyone can sit still, mentally and physically, because of the kshipta and the mudha stages of mind. How many can relate to having those two stages still happening? Yeah? Okay. Well, they need to be dealt with before there can be any serious transformation. And so the third stage happens when you get serious about trying to stop the scattering of your thoughts. So vikshipta is the effort to keep your thoughts concentrated on the goal of meditation. But in the vikshipta state, you can't do it. The mind always escapes. You can get to silent present for a few seconds, and then suddenly a thought comes and you're caught in a reverie, in a memory, in a dream, in some other diversion. And then you try to pull it back after you realize that you got lost again, but you can't hold it, and you're in a constant yo-yo of trying to stay one-pointed and losing it. And then your meditation, you begin to feel it's gone bad, I can't do it, and more hopeless and negative thought forms tend to arise. But you're at least creating the habit of effort, and that's essential. And that habit, if you continue regardless of the successive failures of the effort and don't become hopeless, you will get to the next phase. Let's see. Let me see. Where's the eraser? I was going to write akagrata, but akagra is sufficient. And that stage is when you have succeeded with great effort of keeping the mind one-pointed. Ek means one. Ekagra means I can keep the mind one-pointed. And by the way, the Shaivites, the sages of that tradition as well as others, recommend, and I agree, that the point of focus in meditation to keep you one-pointed should be focusing in the third eye. You can also focus in the heart, you can focus in the Taoist Dantian, but the third eye is going to raise the Kundalini energies if you stay one-pointed in it. So the Akagra state is when you've achieved the ability to stay one-pointed, but with great effort, and if you stop making the effort, you lose it again. And then, finally, the fifth state. The Niruddha state. And Niruddha means that you are now effortlessly one-pointed. You can effortlessly remain in the state of thought-free presence. And that's the key. Can you keep the mind free of all thoughts and all agitation? Because that is the portal to God consciousness. If you cannot remain in stillness, you cannot reach the inner sun of spiritual power. So let's do a guided meditation instead of going further on the journey of information, let's go into the transformation level and put away the notebooks for a moment and allow yourself to shift fully into the state of silent presence and see, feel, sense, observe whether you can stay in the ekagra, one-pointed presence in the light of the third eye. And then if you can abide in this state effortlessly, and if you can stay in total stillness effortlessly, then the dimension of the inner light with all of its power will pour through with immense shakti, immense luminous energy, and begin to saturate the mind and the body. Shanti. How many were able to stay in wakeful stillness without a thought? Yeah? Good. How many fell into scatteredness? How many fell into mudha? Or even a laya in which you fall asleep momentarily. Because those are the main obstacles that will occur so long as the ego is in control of your identity. That's the war that you are in if you choose to engage as a spiritual warrior and gain your freedom from the ego, which is a mind parasite, a false self that has usurped your consciousness and is living your life and not allowing you, the real self, to live because you are buried under its obscuring narratives, agonies, lusts, attachments, greed, envy, hatred, fury, all of the ways that the ego obscures the real self. So, if you really yearn for freedom, this must be a ceaseless practice of remembrance and return to the stillness, to the very center of your being, until you can sustain that unmoved consciousness. Now, why is this important? The sages have taught, whether Buddhist, Hindu, Shaivite, Taoist, all have taught, there is one intelligence, one absolute, infinite self, infinite power, that emanates light, and this light, because of the intelligent design of the creative intelligence to produce a play, a theodrama, the light becomes a dream field. And then you find that you are a character in the dream. And the dream has a multiplicity of characters. But in fact, the innermost perceiver of every character, of every entity, is the one absolute infinite consciousness. You are the light of God, and you are the intelligence of God. That is who you are at the deep center of your mind. But if you do not journey to the center of your mind, you will never know your true nature. And so the question is, are you willing to make the journey and then to abide in that ultimate realm of non-duality? What comes with it is deathlessness, a sense of timeless presence that is not affected by anything that appears in the dream that your ego thinks of as reality, and was never identified as being born and going through traumas and having all kinds of experiences of learning and difficulty and conflict, etc. But there is only light, intelligence, and bliss. And you are the blissful light, and that light, because it pervades and forms and sustains and will ultimately destroy all that appears in the dream field, you are that. You are the dream, the dreamer, the knowing of the dream, and that which is transcendent of the dream and has never been in it or of it. You are all of that, all of reality, and none of it. And you're also the character in the dream who is ignorant of his or her true nature. You're all of that. And because there is only one self pulling all the strings and animating every movement that occurs in the theodrama via the collapsing and decollapsing of quantum and qualium wave functions and the shifting of the pixels of the screen of this holographic simulation through the intelligent intention of the God consciousness. Everything is done by grace. So whether you achieve liberation or not is not actually a function of the ego that's striving for it. But if that striving doesn't happen, then the grace will not occur. But the grace must have already occurred in order for you even want to do the striving. Otherwise, it will have no interest. It'll even be boring to meditate. Why meditate? I want to think. I want to dream. I want to figure things out. I want to come up with ideas. I want to do this, that, or the other. I want to plan my bucket list, you know. All of the things that come up, that's what I want. And I want to achieve things for other people altruistically. I want to serve as a bodhisattva. All of these kinds of thought are purely within the ego illusion, even though they may be very sattvic, but they are a symptom of bondage. So once you know that your inmost self is the supreme consciousness, you are that now, you are that always, and all that is required is letting go of all of that encrusted belief system that constitutes the ego, and voila, you're done. It's a simple act of dispassion for the illusion. And then self-mastery becomes your reality. But there is no ego who becomes a master, but the master self eliminates the sense of egoic identity. And the first step is a negation of the ego and an emptying out of chatter and mind. So it's a letting go into emptiness. But then in the next phase, when the realization of the light and the power of the self emerges in consciousness, then it's about fullness and overflowing. And that's when the character will be reanimated to fulfill its mission and given the tools, the talents, the abilities to complete that mission and fulfill it so that one can graduate from the wheel of birth and death. But you can't usually even know what your mission is until you've reached the emptiness. And then the will of God speaks. So this is the inner journey. And if one is not clear that everything is the one self, even though there are many kinds of entities, there's animals, there is insects, there is flowers and trees, and there are all kinds of creatures, some of which sting and have venom and are awful, and some which are very cute and furry and which can obsess the ego with their softness and being a mascot and feeling I'm not alone because I have this four-legged creature that loves me, you know. All of that is actually one being, not many. And that includes all the entities, the demonic, the angelic, the earthbound spirits, the poltergeists, all of the different kinds of entities in the world are all manifestations of the one intelligence. There is no other. There is nothing outside of the self. And you are that. All of it. The entire creative intelligence that has designed and concealed from you the truth of that design and of your destiny, and who reveals it at the moment when the mission can be completed successfully. And so this is the first stage of the practice of self-mastery. I'll stop there for this evening and open the floor so that too many questions don't build up, if there are any, or comments about anything that's been spoken of. Feel free. Don't be shy. Please go to the mic if you have a comment or a question. And of course, Purusha, if there is someone on the love stream, feel free. So say whatever is important to speak about Purusha. No questions by anyone? How many people feel inspired by this talk? Yeah? Okay, well, that's good. How many people want to run away and wish they never heard any of this? I think it's a good sign that there's silence, and hopefully the akagra or niruddha states being activated. And the consciousness ascending from the individual self into the absolute, infinite, uncreated, unborn, karma-free self that you really are. Fearless and desireless. Free of judgments, projections, attitudes, collusions, attachments, and all the other egoic bondages. Freedom from all of that is easy to attain. You just take off the ego identity. completely and it's gone. All of those malas disappear at once.
Thank you, Shunya, for the teaching tonight, and welcome to everyone who's joining us online. We have people tuning in with us tonight from the US, Canada, Germany, India, the UK, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Belgium, and Uganda. Our first question tonight comes from Michelle, who asks, I'm curious about listening to sound while meditating. I found that I love to listen to the sound of water, and by doing this, it brings me into a deeper place of stillness.
It's an anavapaya technique, but and yes, it can help you get into a more relaxed state if the music is soothing and meditative and slow and soft, or it's water sounds or sounds of nature. And of course, people do use those as guided meditation backgrounds, etc. But you don't want to need to access any kind of music, because you want to be in this state 24/7 and in every situation. And there are times when you don't have the liberty to play music because you're engaged in some extreme activity. And so you want to be able to stay stable in that state of transcendent consciousness regardless of what the body is doing. So it's a good beginning technique, but one to be let go of as soon as one can stabilize in that state of presence, and then use the power of will alone to extend the period in which you are between two thoughts. And the longer you stay in that state, the more Shakti will come to you, and the more letting go will happen, the more relaxation in the body, and the more freedom from needing any crutch of external vibrations or situations to support your inwardness. Okay. Kalyan, you have a...
Well, I just wanted to comment. I don't necessarily have a question, just to comment the... I just feel the gravity of this topic. And I mean, just the questions alone that you posed is enough. It's everything, but there also the five stages of the mind is what stands out, I think, the most this evening. And how controlled I feel by the first few. Mm-hmm. And it's something I'm aware of, that I don't want to think about, but I'm very aware of it, especially when I sit and try to meditate or just to be still, or I'm noticing I'm fidgeting so much, I'm just like helpless in a way. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know what the question is. I just wanted to share that it's touched me this evening, and it feels like a bit of an intervention, in a way. Perhaps because I'm taking it seriously, I think actually the very first thing you said at the beginning of the retreat was, are you in a mind of a receptive mind, I think you said. Mm-hmm. And it just opened up when you said that. And so I just wanted to share. I have a lot of gratitude for this evening and for bringing this to the forefront of attention. And I think that's all I wanted to share.
Okay, well, I appreciate your comments and the sincerity of your receptivity and appreciation of the gravity, as well as the urgency and the ultimate gain that you will get, not just what you have to let go of and all the tormented mind symptoms, but the freedom and the power and the bliss of your real self. So what you will have to do, because there'll be a backlash of your ego that makes you forget this and not take it seriously by tomorrow morning, if not before. So you have to constantly refresh your remembrance of the gravity and the importance and the urgency, and I have to do it now, and overcome those obstacles of the scattered mind and the symptoms of diversion and distraction, etc. So these are things that your ego will try to censor and cause you to forget or think, oh, you know, it's not that important. I've got a family reunion to go to. I've got other things, you know, and this is like second or third in my priority list. So, you know, the question is, will you be able to remain stable in that determination?
Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's ceaseless or it's nothing. I also appreciated the benefit. I mean, it was very simple how you laid it out, and it really mm-hmm. spoke to me. What is the benefit of this? Mm-hmm. And it was that freedom. And so when you shared these states of mind, that word freedom is always, I've always loved that term. It's always spoken mm-hmm. so much to me. It's perhaps mm-hmm. because I realize how much I'm not in free, in mm-hmm. a free state. Mm-hmm. And when you were teaching these tonight, it was very simple. It was just very simple how not free I am, and how clear it is that last stage of the effortlessness is the gateway, I think you said, to God. You have to be in that absolute stillness, because I see when there's not stillness, everything else is just a distraction mm-hmm. to be not in presence.
Yes.
Whether it's planning for a future trip, whether right. it's planning what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's always the presence is over there. Mm-hmm. It's not here now.
That's right.
And so I was thinking about this these last few weeks as this these distractions as being more physical and the something you can see, it's something more tangible. But now tonight it's connecting how it's something, well, first and foremost in the mind. I hadn't considered it that clearly or in that state. So, thank you.
Thank you. I think your insights, I'm sure, are shared by many, if not all. And your recognition of the obstacles and their difficulty of overcoming and the importance of achieving that, I think, is something that everyone is in accord with. And I think that's very helpful for us to have an energy field in which we are all determined to do that and not colluding in diversions and in attachment to the ego. But actually totally devoted to God realization. And the more of us are in that state, the more high and powerful our energy field will be. And the more successful our ashram will be mm-hmm. in our community's mission. So, thank you. Actually, I think let's hold other questions, because I think we're at the end of this evening's introduction, and tomorrow we will go much more deeply into the practice and practices and the more subtle obstacles on the path. These are really the gross obstacles, but we have to navigate through these to get to the next level, in which the soul has a different orientation. Once you've transcended from ego mind, you still have to deal with the subtler limitations of the soul mind until that is transcended into the absolute God consciousness. Because the goal requires inwardness, and because the ego hates inwardness and wants to externalize and socialize and collude with others and justify its chatter by chattering with others, it has been suggested, and I have agreed, that we would make this a silent retreat so that the inner stillness opportunity would be maximized over this weekend, and that you would not divert your attention into any socialization and speak only when it's important in seva or in a class situation where you're asking a question or engaged in an interaction that serves the goal of the retreat. So I hope everyone will be in alignment with that. Okay. So I hope that you will stay inspired by what you've heard, if you are, and not daunted by the difficulty, because you have the inherent ability to choose to be the master over the false self. It is a choice. And once the choice is made, without a conflict and wanting to keep one foot in each boat, I'll have a comfortable life as an ego, but I'll also study and practice this and become, you know, more enlightened, but I'm gonna maintain, you know, my life in the egoic frame of reference, and not let go of that, because I need to deal with chakra one security issues, and I need to deal with the social and the power issues and everything, and make sure that I'm in control of my environment, etc. So what you need to understand is, first get thee the kingdom of heaven, as Yeshua taught, and then all will be added unto you. You will have the ability to live in the world as your character in much greater intelligence and freedom, even within that limited activation of an identity that is something you no longer believe in, but is still a tool that is used as languages to express what is coming from that supreme level of your being. And you will find that you will live your life much more creatively, powerfully, and you will have the inherent ability to change your dream, to change the way things appear, and the karmic destiny of your character when you are ready to fulfill its highest potentialities and make that your destiny. So keep in mind that mastery is not something to be gained, it's something to choose now. And nothing and no one can stop you from choosing it except your own divided mind. When you have realized and reclaimed your power and activated fully your capacity for presence and freedom, all blessings of God will be given through grace. May you all know the bliss of receiving and transmitting that supreme grace and emanating the light of God to all beings. Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste.